Welcome to Project Apology. My name is Areej Elmi, and I'm your host. Over the next 40 minutes or so, you're going to hear the story of a young Muslim woman in Canada who has experienced trauma in her relationship with a parent. In the episode, you will hear her read a letter that she has written from the perspective of a parent. You'll then hear her provide some context of the letter and share how she is coping with the consequences of the trauma in her life. Before we begin, I'd like to give you a content warning. We touch on many difficult subjects in these episodes, including sexual abuse, disordered eating, physical abuse, and neglect. This material can be hard to hear. It was certainly hard for me to hear at times, and it was harder still for the women to live through. If you need to take a break while listening, do so. And if you need support, please go to our website, www.projectapology.com, where we have a number of resources listed for counseling and family violence. Episode 2, What She Couldn't Do For Me. In this episode, we meet Idil. Idil is in her mid-30s, and she is, like many of us are, a child of divorce. Idil's parents' divorce felt like a war. She was punished for loving both of her parents. She had to grow up very quickly, at a very young age. Idil's mom shares stories with her from her life, stories that help Idil and stories that hurt her. In one of the stories, she discusses a regret that she has in her life. It's a regret that implicates Idil. But Idil isn't toppled by this. She learns to both love her mother and herself. I learned so much from this conversation with Idil. She has tremendous wisdom, and I'm sure we can all learn from the way she views life. Here's Idil reading her letter.
I apologize for making you pay for the consequences of our divorce. I apologize for not understanding that children should never be involved in adult issues. The multiple events involving you becoming the enemy, because you were a daughter who loved her father, made you feel unloved by both your parents, especially your number one caregiver, me. Pain, low self-esteem, and loss were the main feelings you had to battle as a child and as an adult. The consequences of negligence in your childhood were huge. Feelings of being alone, having to solve big issues on your own, understanding that you had to be perfect all the time, living with the responsibility of taking care of everyone but yourself, which ultimately led to neglect of yourself as an adult as well. Idil, I apologize for making you feel and understand that life was a battle to be fought alone. I sincerely am sorry for not allowing you to feel safe physically and emotionally as a child and a young woman. These are the things I should have done differently. I should have validated your feelings even when I didn't understand. I should have stopped speaking negatively about a man that will always be a part of your life. I should have put more energy into healing myself as a woman to have a healthier relationship with my only daughter. If I would have done all of these things, normalcy would have been in our relationship and present in our interactions, and love would have won. I'm sorry, Idil.
So how are you feeling right now, having read that?
I'm feeling good. Mm-hmm. I'm really feeling good, and I'm really proud of myself. Mm. I'm really, really proud of myself because these are words that if I would have said that out loud a few years ago, like, I would have been on the floor right now crying and just sobbing. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. But I've done work. Mm-hmm. And I can see that writing these words and speaking these words, mm-hmm. that the work have, you know, really has paid off. Mm-hmm. Because I can actually navigate the emotions, mm-hmm. and understand that this happened. Mm-hmm. And I overcame certain things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm capable of speaking about these things in a calmer way. Mm-hmm. But I also feel, you know, obviously sadness. I feel sadness because... but I mainly feel sadness for the child that I was. You know, mm-hmm. today I'm a young woman. I understand that I have a grasp on a lot of things in my life, and that a lot of things could never happen to me again in that way, in my relationships, because I understand the agency that I have in my relationships. But when I think about myself as an 8-year-old or as a 12-year-old, I'm like,
yeah,
this poor little girl, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. You feel sadness for her.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I do feel sadness for her because I really... And sometimes I just wonder if... I'm not big on ifs and could and should. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty proud of the woman I am today. I did really good. And I can only imagine, you know, if all of that love was poured into me as a child, what I could have been. Mm-hmm. But I know that this is not an exercise that is, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter today, mm-hmm. Because it has passed. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
But there is sadness for the could have been. Yeah.
There's sadness for the child.
Yeah.
And especially because I work with children, mm-hmm. and, you know, this, I tell people all the time that I'm extremely good with children because of my childhood. And because, not just because of the skills I have acquired and my studies, and but it's because I know the feeling of being a child and not having somebody. And I don't want any of my students, anyone to feel that. So I'm really good with them. And they feel so special, mm-hmm. with me. And it brings me joy to bring them joy. And it's as if it brings me peace about my own childhood to bring them love and care and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sadness. Sadness for the young girl. And also sadness for my mother.
Interesting.
Yeah, also sadness for her because, you know, there's a part in my letter where I say that if she would have concentrated on her healing,
yeah.
as a woman, yeah. she could have been there for me more. Mm-hmm. But I understand today as a woman, I really, really understand that, you know, before being a mother, before being whatever, you know, you're a woman. And if you, as a woman, are not well, most probably you won't be able to show up in your other relationships, right? Mm-hmm. And so, as a young kid, I could not understand why my mother couldn't show up for me. But now that I am a woman and I understand certain things, I understand. Yeah. It's not fair for, mm-hmm. the little young girl, mm-hmm. that I was. But as a woman, I really, really understand what my mother was going through. Mm-hmm. As a Black woman immigrant in this new country, newly divorced, I really understand. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make it fair. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it fair to the young girl that I was. Mm-hmm.
So there's so much compassion for mom and her situation. But as you say, there's enormous sadness for the loneliness that you felt, right, at a young age. So how are you holding on to both? Because you're doing both, you said.
Yeah. Well, I'm holding on. Clearly, I have faith. So faith is something big. When I hold pain and when I feel pain, I know that it will pass. And I know that this pain is not me. And I also understand that my mother has her share of work to do and that I can't do that work for her or even with her sometimes. I can't. It wouldn't be fair to the little girl because I carry this little girl with me all the time. And I think that everyone carries, you know, the little child that they were. And as an adult, I have a responsibility to take care of that little girl. And I do for her what wasn't done for me. And so I don't feel responsible to heal my mother. I feel responsible to honor the little girl. And I feel love for my mother. I love her so much. I love her so much. I love my mom a lot, so much. Yeah. I love my mom a lot.
Yeah, sit with that for a second. Yeah, because there's tears in your eyes.
Yeah.
What are you feeling?
It's probably the only thing, the only thing that would make me sad profoundly would be for her not to know how much I love her. And I think that would be the sad thing at the end of the day. Because I know that my mother did a lot for me. And that a lot of the stuff that she did not do for me, she couldn't do for herself. And as a woman, I really, really, really understand that. But also, I'm a new generation of people. I'm a new generation of women. And so, obviously, I don't understand my womanhood and the way I should be accountable the same way as a person that was born in the 60s, you know? And, but what is really non-negotiable is that I love her, but my love for her has to be able to live with the love that I have for that young girl that was neglected and that was abused, you know? And so I think that most of my work, most of what I do in terms of individual work, through my personal life, therapy, everything has to do with bringing peace to that young girl, but also making my mother understand that I love her, but whatever treatment I received when I was a young girl, I will not allow anymore.
Okay, yeah.
And that is probably the tension between my mother and I.
Yeah.
And what probably brought me to tears is just the possibility that my mother could think that in all of that, that I don't love her. I love her so much. And, but it's just that at some point, you have to be able to make the difference between the love that you have for yourself and the love that you're capable of giving to others.
Yeah, one cannot compromise the other, no. Is what I'm hearing, yeah.
No. And when you're a child, you don't have the possibility to advocate for your own self if the people who are responsible for you are not making you understand that you are worthy and that you should be protected and that you should be loved. Because the way, you know, our society works, we children are children. They belong to people. So that's not right in itself, but legally, you know, when you're a minor, you belong to your parents. And if your parents only understand that they can love you by feeding you, giving you clothes and a roof over your head, you will be emotionally abused and neglected, mm-hmm. because having a child is way more than just giving them clothes, food, and a roof. But in the context of my life, in the context of my story, I understand that my mother did the bare minimum because that's all she could do. Mm-hmm. And it's not because that she wanted it that way.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. she traveled from East Africa to come to Canada to be with my father, who promised her a beautiful family life, which is not what happened. So, you know, my mother was shook by all of that. Mm-hmm. And she did her best, mm-hmm. raising three children. And she did, I really can say that she did her best. But her best doesn't mean that I wasn't abused and neglected along the way. Mm-hmm. It's very complicated, but it's the truth. And I can understand, I don't have children myself, but I can really, really understand how painful it can be for a mother that did her best to hear her only daughter say mm-hmm. that she felt alone, empty, and abused
mm-hmm.
as a child.
Mm-hmm.
When as a mother, you really, truly did your best.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand how that can be a very painful place.
Yeah. Then for you, it's still worth saying, it sounds, because as you mentioned earlier, these are conversations you've had with your mom, right? You've asked her to acknowledge that you were lonely, sad, empty, and abused.
Yes, and she refused to validate that experience because in her mind, she's very aware of what she has sacrificed to raise us and to have us and to maintain us alive, basically. And for her, and it's sad that that's her conclusion, since I've been, with the years, I've been more and more comfortable speaking about my discomfort and my story as a child and as a young woman. And unfortunately, all of that truth coming out in the last few years have made her understand that I was an ungrateful child.
Mm.
And so, you know, she understands me speaking that publicly to other family members as a betrayal and as pure ungratefulness. Obviously, culture plays in all of that, you know, because we understand family as the core. And when I say we, African people mostly understand family as the core institution of everything. There's no bigger, finer, brighter institution than family. And in all of that, the mother can very hardly be criticized. And to me, it's not criticism, you know, that I'm bringing to my mother. It's just my experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an opportunity for us to do better,
mm-hmm.
to have a better mother-daughter relationship. Because I know that eventually, maybe, inshallah, I'll have children myself. So it's very important for me to have a good relationship with my parents, because the energy, you bring that energy to your children, you bring that energy to your grandparents. And I often think about the future,
mm-hmm.
and I want to keep my relationship clean. And when I say clean, I mean honest. It doesn't have to be simple,
mm-hmm.
but it has to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say for the past 5 years, I have tried to bring honesty in my relationship with my mother. And unfortunately, it has been interpreted as ungratefulness. But the good side of this is that I'm feeling better every year mm-hmm. as a woman. You know, I sincerely am feeling way better because I don't have to hold all of that accountability that is not for me to hold. Mm-hmm. And speaking that truth allows me to live a healthier life on an individual level. But clearly on a family level, it brings a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. And I can say today that my mother and I have a relationship that's, how can I say, very tense. Very, very tense. But I'm at peace with it mm-hmm. because I understand my intentions. And I understand that people individually have work to do in order to accept reality. It's very hard for a woman that has traveled all the way to cold Canada to be with her husband and to come here with her two very, very young babies and to realize that things are not going to be what they thought, what she thought.
What did she find instead of, you know, like you said, a family life?
Well, you know, my mother, you know, she always tells me, make sure you know a man before you marry him. Take your time, take your time, take your time. Because her experience with my father was, he was the first man she ever loved. Mm. And so they met and she fell in love and she allowed herself to be human and to just fall in love. And she trusted him. And unfortunately, when she came to Canada, my father was very much behaving like a single man okay. that didn't have any responsibilities. So she had to make the very hard decision of being patient with him for a little while, but then filing for divorce. And when you leave your country to pursue your every single dream with a man that doesn't understand his responsibility, or should I say responsibilities towards his kids, towards his wife, towards society as a whole, then women end up in poverty. Mm-hmm. They end up in very violent psychological situations, you know, and that's what happened to my mom. And so in all of that, she had children, you know, she had babies. And so we were there. We were there to witness everything. And we basically grew with her. Seeing her mentally ill mm-hmm. In an environment where mental health wasn't even addressed or, you know, mm-hmm. named as something real. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I saw my mother suffer
yeah.
a lot. And so the woman that I am today, I understand. I really understand what she went through. Mm-hmm. And I understand why she was so mad mm-hmm. and why she is still so mad mm-hmm. because she refuses therapy. Mm. So, but the child that I was, mm-hmm. I can only think about the child that I was.
Yeah.
And that is not fair. Mm-hmm. It is not fair for children to come into this world and to have to deal with adults who at the end of the day decided to have children and have to protect these children. And I can honestly say that my mom did her best to protect us from basic homelessness, I would say. But the rest, emotionally,
yeah.
was bankrupt, mm-hmm. you know? And I know that as a Somali woman saying that, people don't take it well. Hmm. Family members don't take it well. They see it as a disgrace.
Okay.
And they see it as, you know, you growing up in a white society talking bad about your parents. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it is, because as you can see, you know, I love my mom. Mm-hmm.
Very much.
I really love her. Just thinking about her and everything that she is, what she represents, the fire in me, she has put that there. Mm. She is the person that has put fire in me as a young woman. Mm-hmm. She is the person that has told me so many things that that has made me aware mm-hmm. of who I am in the world mm-hmm. and how smart I am and how amazing things can be professionally, because my mom went to university while having children, yeah. while being a single mom with no money. So she was a warrior, and I saw that. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that she didn't harm us. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, you know, there's space for children to talk about that. And that doesn't mean that I don't see my mother as the hero she is. It doesn't mean that I think she's a woman that doesn't deserve my love. It just means that I am aware of what happens to children when women are harmed. And when a woman is harmed in a family, the children almost become orphans.
Hmm. Can you say more? That's so interesting.
What's that?
Like when you say when a woman is harmed, her children become orphans. So meaning, is she emotionally absent? How do they become orphans?
They become orphans because, you know, children, they're human beings. They wake up in the morning, they go to school, and stuff happens to them too at school and everything. And when you come home every day, you have to touch base with your children. Mm. You know, I'm a grown person. And when I go to work and I have a big day, I have a girlfriend on the phone waiting for me at night, yeah. you know? And so imagine for a 6-year-old. Imagine for a 12-year-old. And we did not have any of that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I understand that, you know, women cannot hold all of the responsibility of raising children. You know, my father signed that contract as well. But when the reality is that the majority of single parents are mothers, that's the reality. Yeah. You know, if women are harmed, then the children are mainly left to themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about, you know, this Canada, you know, things are different in other countries where family is bigger mm-hmm. and you have your cousins and you have everybody. But here it's like different. Totally. You have this little unit and your mother becomes the center of everything. Mm-hmm. And if you lose your mother, in Canada, as an African family, you lose everything, mm-hmm. mainly.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a single mom and you have to deal with all of these responsibilities, oftentimes you will put your needs at the last, it's going to be the last thing on your list.
Yeah.
You won't heal. So you will be easily triggered by things that sometimes are just normal. It is normal for your daughter to love her father. But when you don't heal, and that is what I know for sure as a woman today, mm-hmm. is when you don't heal, you're triggered by things that you didn't have the time to actually analyze from other angles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the luxury my mom did not have. As a single mom, you're managing crisis. You don't have time and energy to just sit back and think about your situation, think about your children's situation. So you're just reactive and reacting to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I know about my experience with my mom, is that she was just reacting. to everything. And in her reaction, she would invalidate my feelings. She would, you know, sometimes she would just say very, very horrible things. So, but that's her pain talking. But as a child, you don't care to know that. You don't care to understand that. And you shouldn't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As an adult, I understand it. As an adult, I don't allow it. But yeah.
Yeah, it's relating differently to her now. Yeah.
Yes, and today the dynamic is different, mm-hmm. because I'm grown and because I speak my mind. So today, my mom is very uncomfortable around me. She's very, very, very uncomfortable around me because she understands that I understand what happened. And now the tipping point is an apology, which, mm-hmm. which for now, at least, will never happen.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And why won't it happen? You know, you've asked for it. What's...
I never bluntly asked for it.
Okay.
I never asked my mom to apologize. Because I know that culturally you can apologize in different ways. You know, saying I apologize is like saying I love you. Mm-hmm. You know, in different cultures you will say I love you in so many other ways without using words. So I'm not expecting my mom to one day knock at my door and be like, I'm so sorry, my love. I'm not expecting that. But a change of behavior to me is a big apology. It's huge, you know? A person that does things differently and that is trying to do very kind things repeatedly and... at some point will name your pain, will put words on your pain, and will at least say, I understand. That, to me, could be an apology as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the shape of an apology, the shape of it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is the person leaning in, doing most of the work, to understand, to show the other person that I really understand.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is an apology, is where is the energy coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the person that was harmed that's doing the work?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or is it the person that actually harmed that's doing the work?
Yeah.
I'm not big on, you know, putting words on everything. And If you say, some people say they're sorry all the time. They say they're sorry all the time and they just redo it the minute after. So me, I'm really big on being sorry,
mm-hmm.
proactively. And so far, I think that my mother is in pain.
Okay.
Right now, at this very moment, I think that she's in pain because she's computing the childhood of her children.
Mm-hmm.
And she's understanding that her children are now living the consequences of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think my mom is a sensitive person. So hearing me say certain things, it affects her. So I know that she's computing on her side.
Mm-hmm.
But when I touch base with her, because I do, and I want to give her the window to show that she is sorry. Because if you block a person and you cancel the person cannot apologize, right? So if you, it's still possible to have a relationship with that person,
mm-hmm.
it's always good to give them that window. And I have tried over the years to give that window to my mother. Unfortunately, she's not seeing the need or the purpose in apologizing. And me, I'm busy healing because, you know, I've lived in my mother's home until I was 18, 19. And you have to compute 18 to 19 years of childhood, teenage years, And you have to make sense of that. You have to make sense of that. And I'm very proud to say I've been to therapy. I've cried stuff out. And I had breakthroughs. You know, it took a long time for me to speak, you know, with you and tell you things very clearly. It took work. Years of work. But, you know, if I would have done this interview at 22... it would have been a whole lot different.
And you mentioned mom now sort of sees the consequences, right? And you and your siblings. So what do you mean by that? What is she seeing?
Well, she's seeing her children dealing with mental health issues. You know? She's seeing her children maybe having trust issues in their relationships. I know that for me, you know, being her only daughter, being 35, not being married, for her, it's like, she's like, something went wrong. There's nothing wrong with not being married, but for her, it means that something went wrong. For me, it only means that I'm very careful with my personal life, with my emotions, with my intimacy. It's a choice that is very healthy for me, and I live it in a very happy way. I have no issue with that. But for her, and you know, that's what I find interesting with my mom, is that, you know, she met my father very young, and she repeated to me almost all of my younger years to be careful. She was the one that told me to be careful with my emotional life, with my personal life. And it's with her in mind that I'm very careful, but still very open. But I don't know, she gave us the best tools to navigate our life, but it seems like she doesn't trust the education she gave us because she's seeing that she's projecting stuff on us. You know, obviously, a lot of African parents, they want you to be at a certain place at a certain age. But emotionally, yeah, she's seeing the consequences in us just being very selective. You know, all of my brothers, they don't have children. I don't have children. And she believes, I think, it's a consequence of our childhood. And that because it was so hard for us, that maybe that's the reason why we didn't venture there. But I don't see it negatively. I see it as something very positive. It made us very conscious. You know, my brothers could have went out and had how many children, just like their father. They didn't. They're very conscious and clearly very aware. So I think it's very positive. So it depends on who's looking. And if you want to analyze the situation rooted in your insecurities, me, I see it as something very good. My brothers did not have children that they didn't want to take care of, unlike their father. It's very positive.
Because it's very protective, but mom sees that as a lack, but you're really seeing it as there's a benefit and a sort of a value to it.
And I think it's because she also sees value in family and in having children, and she's in a very you know, you when you're a woman, you have to have children, and clearly I'm not in that mode. So we come from different spaces in our heads. And also, my mother tells me that It's funny because my mother told me two things at different moments. She told me that she profoundly doesn't regret having children, and that it was the most beautiful thing she ever did. But at the same time, years later, she told me that if she had to redo it again, she would have never had children.
Mm. Wow.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What telling me that.
Yeah. What is that like?
Oh.
As one of those children hearing mom say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, when she said that, I was in my 30s. I had an understanding of her pain.
Hmm.
I had a real understanding of her pain. If she would have told me that when I was 17, I think it would have done a lot of damage. A lot. But when she told me that, I was, you know, 32, 33. So I received it, and I felt it was inappropriate to tell me that. You can tell that to your sister or, you know. But to tell your child that, and a child that had a very difficult childhood,
mm-hmm.
that at the end of the day, they were not wanted. I thought it was very inappropriate. But at the same time, I think that my mother is also a woman.
Mm.
And I think that sometimes she speaks as a woman, and sometimes she speaks as a mother, because mm-hmm. she has not merged all of these identities in a way that there's no trauma involved. And, you know, when maternity, that's what I think, you know, when you are the wife of, the mother of, a woman, when all of this happens in a healthy way, you can actually navigate these conversations without too much friction and contradiction. Because it happens in a somewhat healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
But when my mother grew up in Djibouti, after 19, during her days, if you're not married, you're not doing anything.
Okay.
So my mom grew up in a society where you have to get married at some point.
Yeah.
It was the stop. You had to take that stop. And I did not grow up in that kind of society. So what's happening in her mind, her understanding of herself as a 20-year-old, as a 30-year-old, as a 40-year-old, as a person that had children with a man that did not honor his marriage and his children, all of that mixed up together. One day you're okay with it, and one day you're like, why did I have children? But in all of that, there's the children.
They exist, yeah.
And they're there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're communicating that to the people
mm-hmm.
who are the children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I was very, very proud of myself. Because when she told me that, the old me, the younger me, would have been triggered in so many ways.
Yeah.
I would have been, you know, probably depressed for a long time. But no. Mm-hmm. No. I received it. I thought it was very inappropriate. But I thought it was her story.
Mm. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really thought it was her story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when people ask you, when did you know you became an adult? Or when did you know you became a woman?
Mm-hmm.
I know I knew that I was a woman in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could receive something that was very, very harming for me as a child, but as a woman, not at all.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so I knew I was grown.
Yeah.
I knew.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Because I'm just hearing in there, like, you didn't take it as, like, a condemnation of you.
No.
It's like, it's your story, but that doesn't diminish my right to exist at all. Yeah.
And that's most probably the hardest exercise anyone has to make. Is to understand that your parents are who they are. They did what they did, maybe their best, maybe not. At the end of the day, they are people as well. And you have a life to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a life to live. And that's what I do. I live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my mom. And everywhere I go, I honor her. And I speak good words about her because I have very good things to say about her. But I also have a childhood. And it's important, you know, in that conversation, it's important for me to say that I chose my mom as the parent writing the apology for a specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
I could have chosen my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that is very, very important to me is that when we talk about neglect in children, we often blame women. But that's because the women are the people who stay. And then they take all of the backlash for everything that happens. I'm very aware that my father did things that are really, really, really horrible by not being there. But because he wasn't there, I don't have many stories of harm with him. But that doesn't mean that he didn't do any harm. He's the person that actually did the most harm in the story by being absent, by not providing when he could, when we were living in the same neighborhood and he wasn't providing at all time, energy, or money. So it's important to me to say that I have chosen to have my mom write this letter to me because she's the person I care for the most. So her apology is what matters to me. She's the person I love the most. She's the person that I want to have a healthy relationship with. So I did not choose her to blame her and to make her responsible for everything. I chose her because she's the most important person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very positive for me.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, she did that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to blame her.
Yeah.
Usually, in my understanding of things, when you wish to have an apology from someone, it's actually because there's care behind that. Because there's some people, I really don't care for their apologies. There's some people out there, they did stuff to me and I really don't care for their apology. So an apology for me is something that is loving and caring.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want an apology from someone, it's actually you're giving them a piece of your power. And you're giving them a piece of you and you're like,
mm-hmm.
please apologize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something about like this proximity of the pain, because as you said, you know, dad perhaps is more distant, you know, his pain has been very impactful, but there's a closeness to the pain with mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm feeling too.
Because she took care of us.
Yeah.
She had us very close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she made it known that she was going to protect her children,
mm-hmm.
but she couldn't take care of her own self.
Yeah.
And nobody was taking care of her.
Yeah.
So obviously she was going to harm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because people need people to take care of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was alone.
Mm-hmm.
Taking care of 3 children.
Yeah. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and my parents are pushing 65 plus and they're getting older. And I feel like the apology will come one day.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, just because of timing,
mm-hmm.
and of life. But I would have loved an apology that is full of energy, consciousness,
mm-hmm.
that comes from a place of, I want to give that to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I have made peace with myself as a young woman today and told myself that if I don't get that, if I don't have that peaceful relationship with my mother, until she even passes, that it's okay.
Mm.
I have given myself that gift already. And I know that a lot of people, they live in pain, especially when the person is no longer here. And then you're hostage. And I refuse to be hostage of that story because I didn't decide I didn't decide from 0 to 18 that things would happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the gift that I really, really give to myself is to be like, this is this life. This is this life that I did not choose.
Mm-hmm.
And I have faith. I have faith in God, faith in life. And I know that everything that I go through, if I can protect myself from it, great. If it does happen to me, I have to process.
Mm.
Process my feelings. Be around people who will acknowledge and validate my experience. That's what got me where I am today. Because a lot of people, sometimes they're like, I didn't know you went through all of that. I didn't know this happened. And you're so calm, you know, you're so...
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I did the work.
Mm-hmm.
I went to therapy.
Yeah.
And I'm surrounded with people with whom I can say, I'm not feeling good today. And this is what's going on in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And this has helped me to heal and to really make the difference between the story of my parents, the control I had over my childhood, which was zero,
yeah,
and the level of accountability I could really grasp for my own self so that I don't repeat the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's important to me as an adult today is to not repeat the cycle. Because I know that when it comes to harm, abuse, and poverty, it's a cycle.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, I read a little bit about the data. It's a cycle. It happens again and again and again and again and again. And if you don't take a real stand and if you don't do the work, it will happen again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you unconsciously will become the story of your mother. And what I have tried to do for the last 15 years of my life is to not reproduce that. And I could have so many times.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean I could have so many times?
Well, because in the process of healing,
mm-hmm,
you experience loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
You bump into people where you guys will bond in terms of trauma, and yeah, you will think that it's love. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It is trauma. I have been aware enough of myself, my body, my mind, to not put myself in situations. And so, you know, everything that I do, studies and readings and everything, is to be aware of my environment, of what could happen to me, of what I should be careful for. You know, these are things that I'm very careful, and I'm very interested in the stories of the women in my own family. And I have asked questions to many women in my family, and I have seen that all of the women have been harmed.
Mm.
In some kind of way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides, my grandmother, they were, you know, they were harmed.
Yeah.
They were not the only woman in the marriage, and they were treated and very, very poorly. And both of them, on both sides, have been beaten,
yeah,
by their husband. And this, to me, is not a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a coincidence that my mother ends up in a harmful situation, that my grandmother was in a harmful situation. At some point, you know, somebody has to be very much aware of what's going on. And I want to be that person. I want to be aware of where my life is going. And if I do have children,
mm-hmm,
I want to be able to provide a safer place for them. Not perfect, but safer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that my mother and my grandmother, they have done their best, but they have been thrown in this world unaware of what could happen to them if they weren't independent and very aware of who they're dealing with. And so I just don't want to be in that situation.
Yeah.
I just don't. And because I have been, I witnessed my mom suffer.
Yeah.
I saw her suffer. So the standards that I have for the relationships that I nurture, friendships, loveship, everything, are really high.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am aware of what could happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm neglectful of certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this can be a space for either addressing the Muslim community as to, you know, what you want to see change.
Mm-hmm.
You can also speak to what this exercise might have meant to you. Or if there's anything else that you just want to, you know, we didn't get to that you want to talk or think through.
No, it's a great exercise, okay. Honestly. It was really a great exercise. Talking about painful things and not feeling horrible afterwards,
mm-hmm.
Is always good,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's always a good sign. So it was a heavy conversation, but necessary, and I computed a lot of things, new things that I thought that I actually went around the whole thing, and I was like, I thought it was okay, no need to talk about it, but I learned from my own experience, and I learned especially from where I am and all of that,
mm-hmm.
And I hope it will help people to be more comfortable talking about these things, and especially Muslim women,
mm-hmm.
I believe should have this space, whatever space, doesn't have to be public, but just mm-hmm. to express the feeling that you have,
yeah,
you know, how people treat you, how you expect to be treated, is so important.
Mm-hmm. And why is it important that they have that space?
Because if they don't, they don't exist.
Wow.
They're not there. If Muslim women don't give themselves, they don't give themselves the gift of speaking about their experiences. There's other younger women and older women who really are going to believe that they are paranoid and that whatever they're feeling is not real. And so every time that I speak my truth, I know that I participate in rooting another woman in her truth.
Wow.
I know that for sure. And because I have been in my life journey, not sure, lost about different things. And I have listened and bumped into women who were really sitting in their truth. And that rooted me, and that gave me the energy to do what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that every day, you know, when I'm done doing my personal things, I turn on my computer, I listen to podcasts, I listen to so many things, and I listen to these things in order to give sense to my experience, because I can't be alone in my corner thinking that I'm the only person that has experienced that, because it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Muslim women of all women should be able to express why they're uncomfortable in their intimacy, especially, mm-hmm. not just in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we talk about public spaces, representation as a, you know, large thing. But I think that the space that is the most important for Muslim women is their intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot imagine a world where Muslim women are not comfortable with their own self. And that's where it starts for me. But the root of it all is how do Muslim women feel inside themselves? And how comfortable are they with their own personal experiences? Once that is dealt with, the rest, anything can happen. But I think that a lot of us are not necessarily comfortable with everything that we are, and I think that we need to see more women who are comfortable with the complexity of their story.
Project Apology is brought to you by the Tessalit Institute. It was recorded and edited by me, Arij Elmi, featuring music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you for listening.